You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. Just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
What we want.
You're listening to On the Couch.
On the Couch
with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are officially on the couch with Dr. Michelle. So nice to have you with me, as always, on Fridays, 11 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, here on the country's most listened to talk radio station, LA Talk Radio. You're going to have a great time if you keep it here on LA Talk Radio today, because I have a really interesting guest. As usual, you're going to learn a lot of things. And also, if you'd like to call in, or if you have a comment or question for our guests, you can do so. The number here at LA Talk Radio is 323. That's in Los Angeles area code, so don't worry about that. 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. Of course, you can always email me at my email site, which is linked right up here to the radio station, which is docmichelle@AOL.com. That's D-O-C Michelle with two L's at AOL.com. And that's where I get a lot of comments and questions. And I can pull you up right away and ask our guest instant questions you may have. So I'd love to hear from you. You know, you can't pick up the newspaper, turn on the TV, can't do anything online without reading or watching shows about criminals, disturbed folks. You know, the folks who brought weapons to work, and I know my postman hates this, but the folks who went postal on coworkers, we hear about students whose sudden violence or planned gun attacks catches everybody off guard. And, of course, recently we saw the major sports celebrities. They're attacking spectators or the paparazzi, you know, the celebrities and the sports people. What's up with that? What's going on with that? Well, why are there so many loose cannons walking around in our society? I thought this was the age of, you know, 2012. Everyone's saying, you know, there's a new age and good things are going to be happening. Well, there seems to be a lot of scary things. You know, the homegrown terrorists? Yeah, the unbalanced folks walking around. Anyway, we have an expert who's going to tell us all about that. My on-air guest today is Dr. George Simon, Jr. He's a licensed clinical psychologist, and he's conducted so many workshops on the topic of disturbed individuals in our society. Why, where, when, how, what's going on? And of course, you can check out his blogs, which are fascinating, and I love his blog address, www.manipulate-people.com. All right, manipulativepeople.com, and we'll get into that a little bit. But anyway, let's pull him up because he's on the air with us right now. Well, good morning, Dr. George Simon. How are you?
Good morning, Dr. Michelle. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. You know, I really enjoyed your book. Terrific. Really,
thank you so much.
You know, it's an insight to a lot of people out there who really don't understand people who have, we call them what, characters, disturbances or disturbances of character. Personality disorders. And, you know, there really are a lot of people in this society who are, say, going postal and are just basically freaking out and doing things that are strange. The white-collar crime going on in our society, it has blossomed again, I may say. So, you know, it's crazy.
We've almost come to expect it, have we not?
You know, we have. We have. And of course, it's the source of a lot of very interesting reality shows on television. A lot of people, yeah, those shows have great ratings. A lot of people like to watch kind of the twisted minds and how they messed with other people and changed society in so many ways. So anyway, your book again, it's great. It's really a great read, folks, if you're always interested in why people are like they are and you want to find out and survive and understand the clinically disturbed people in your life and why these people are making news. Character disturbance. It's the phenomenon of our age. So let's jump right into it. Tell me this, Dr. Simon. How do you define people who have disturbances of character? And how are they different from people who might be defined as being neurotic?
Well, in my book, I go to great lengths to contrast the folks that we have commonly thought of as neurotic to some degree with those that I call character disturbed. Mm-hmm. The worst of those, of course, maybe even having a character disorder, their character disturbance is so severe.
Right.
But they're really very different on almost every dimension that you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, one of the problems is that all of the tools that were developed to help people change and to deal with personality problems, they were all developed to help individuals who were classically neurotic.
Right.
And so most of these tools are pretty functionally useless when it comes to understanding and dealing with the disturbed character. And in my book, I go through a point-by-point comparison with all the different features of personality that differ for these folks. I'll give you a couple of examples.
Okay.
Whereas neurotic individuals are overly hung up, shall we say.
Right.
Children of the 60s used to use that. I'm dating myself here. That means their conscience perhaps is actually a little overactive, and they get a little apprehensive when it's really not necessary to get so apprehensive about doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in contrast to that, the disturbed character is not hung up enough.
Uh-huh.
In other words, there's nothing there to stop them from just doing what it is they feel like doing.
Right.
And another example would be, for example, that the neurotic individual is very often unaware of some of the things that are troubling them. Many of their emotional conflicts are not very conscious to them.
Huh.
Whereas the disturbed character, they know what they're doing.
Right.
And it's not that they don't know what they're doing, it's just that they don't particularly care.
So, Dr. Simon, when you're talking about neurotic, are you talking about more like, we call them Axis 1 disorders, you're talking about maybe anxiety, some possibly manic-y symptoms associated with bipolar, or are you talking about that kind of a person who's...
Yeah, as I point out in the book, anxiety is always the key feature in neurosis.
Right.
Without anxiety, you don't have neurosis.
Okay.
And in fact, the most troubling thing about the most severe character disorders is they don't have even an adaptive amount of anxiety.
Right.
In other words, they don't get shaken. They don't appear to get unnerved enough. As a matter of fact, if they did, they probably wouldn't do some of the things that they do.
Exactly.
Whereas neurotic individuals are pretty well driven by their anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when all of our classical theories were developed, they were developed in an age where neurosis was very... It was not only very common, but it was at a fever pitch, shall we say.
Right.
I say in my book that in Freud's day, if there were a motto for the time that would describe the cultural milieu, it would be, don't even think about it. That would be the slogan describe the Victorian era. It was so socially and culturally repressive.
Right.
And Freud and his followers, they treated individuals who were so anxious and so hung up, shall we say, that they had really bizarre symptoms that they came in with.
Right. I had a patient come in the other day, and she said something like a psychiatrist had diagnosed her with hysteria. And I went, whoa, I haven't heard that one since my textbook back in college. Hysteria.
Yes. I give some examples of that in my book. Frankly, most clinicians have not even seen a case or treated a case analogous to the kinds of cases that our classical theoreticians saw.
Right.
And
right.
If there were a motto that would describe our age, it would be like the old commercial used to say, just do it.
Right. Right, exactly.
And for that reason, we have an entirely different phenomenon on our hands.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, we do have neurotics out there, but for the most part, they are the reason that we have civilization. Freud used to complain that that civilization was the cause of neurosis.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a point. What he meant was that, you know, when society is really repressive and is overly condemning and doesn't allow for free expression, then people can end up being anxious wrecks.
Sure.
So he had a point.
And, of course, folks who are brought up possibly in homes that are repressive, even in this day and age, you know, I mean, we see the strictness or the repressiveness, or we don't talk about it, you can't allow your children to speak. And I think that was more in the earlier generation, probably where you and I came from, maybe. So, but no, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just going to point that out. That you know,
absolutely.
I think that's where there's a lot of us in our age who did have a lot of neurosis or you know anxiety because there's a lot of repression there. And so, thought I'd throw that out there. But go ahead, George.
I'm glad that you did.
Yeah.
My point about the fact that there are still some neurotics among us, however, is that this is kind of a good thing if it's not extreme.
Right.
In other words, it's in contrast to what Freud said about civilization causing neurosis, my assertion is that neurosis is the reason for civilization.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In other words, it's the fact that most of us, at least to some degree, not a pathological degree, but to some degree, get a little hung up about just doing whatever the heck we please.
Right, right.
Is the reason we have civilization.
Right.
Yes. And so thank goodness that there are still some of us neurotics left.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's conscience involved, you know. There's anxiety because we're, what can we do? What can, you know, it's kind of like the morals of society sometimes. We're a little overly paranoid, you know, if we're a little too anxious and a little too neurotic. But that really does keep a lot of people in order, you know.
That's
really
correct.
Does, you know, so conscience, a lot of conscience, a lot of morality, a little fear doesn't really hurt, is what you're saying.
So, that's right. Yeah. A little bit does not hurt. As a matter of fact, a little bit is pretty good.
Yeah.
We don't want to go back to the Victorian era. We don't want to do that. But the pendulum has swung way too far to the opposite extreme. We are now living in an age that I call the age of entitlement and permissiveness, and the result of that is a whole new phenomenon, you know, the Charlie Sheen phenomenon.
Yeah, that's a phenomenon.
Like you pointed out, you just cannot turn on the TV. There are all these larger-than-life characters from Bernie Madoff to Charlie. I mean, you just name it. Just when you think that you have heard the most egregious example, something else comes along, and you end up scratching your head and saying, what the heck is going on here?
I hear you. Well, you know, I want to throw this one out at you because, I mean, as soon as we started watching, and I'm sure you felt this way, as soon as we started watching Charlie Sheen, you know, come on interview shows and start rattling on, you know, about having tiger blood and how his DNA was, what did he call? Let's see, what kind of DNA? He said something like, I don't know. He said it was like a superhero character or something. I'm blanking on that right now. But, you know, I immediately, as you probably did, thought Manic Swing. Okay.
Yes, from, he's in the throes of a manic episode.
Right. And the possibly the cocaine or crack or whatever he's doing, you know, really affected the dopamine. And he's on, you know. So, but okay, let me ask you this. There is, though, that really what you're talking about is along with possibly, you know, drug-induced mania or whatever from him or whatever problem, because he seems to have been functioning pretty well before he started heavy drug use. So what I'm asking you is this society, because of his self-entitlement of making $3 million an episode, has that really, has that led to his craziness? Some people think he's a genius, by the way. But
I don't think the causes are that easily pinpointed. I wish it were as simple as that. I think there are a number of factors that contribute to this, but certainly our culture of permissiveness and entitlement certainly enables these patterns.
Mm-hmm.
It helps foster them in such a way that they become more problematic.
Right.
And, you know, you can say what you want about the influence and the role of drugs and other conditions.
Right.
But what would make a person go there in the first place, especially in this age of enlightenment when we have all this information out there, and even some of these folks who are not being very good role models have been spokespersons for educating young people about the dangers out there. So it's not a matter of low awareness. With all the information out there, what would make a person go into territory where they would really get themselves into trouble and perhaps mess up not only their own life, but the lives of their children and those around them and cause untold damage? What would make a person even go into that territory in the first place if there weren't character issues involved from the start?
No, you're right. You're so right.
And that's the thing that mental health professionals have wanted to run away from for way too long.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think they've done that?
Well, for one thing, as you mentioned earlier, it is so much easier to deal with a good neurotic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you and I talked a little earlier, and what I was just to let you in on our conversation, folks, I told Dr. Simon that when I started out in my practice, you know, as a psychologist, I would really take on a lot of the folks who had what are called character disturbances or personality disorders, primarily, you know, the dramatic and erratic. I can do this. I can help this person. And now that I've been practicing for a long time, I'm really not willing to, you know, it's not my specialty right now. And maybe that's a chicken way out of a psychologist's chicken way out. So that's what we were talking about. I work more with people, you know, who have depression, anxiety. Again, I counsel people who have had, you know, criminal backgrounds and who are willing to listen and work, and they're on medications. But anyway, that's something else. But
that's another one of those differences that I contrast in my book between your neurotic individual and the disturbed character.
Yeah.
The neurotic individual is in distress, and they seek your help.
Right.
The other person, the disturbed character, is kind of comfortable with what they do.
Yeah.
It's everybody else that's unnerved by it. And they usually have to be dragged kicking and screaming into therapy.
Exactly.
So it doesn't make the enterprise really appealing to most clinicians. But the point that I make for both clinicians and for the general public is that once you adopt an entirely different approach to dealing with the issue, it becomes a lot easier. I have literally enjoyed my time doing this kind of work. I know that sounds pretty masochistic, perhaps. But once I cast off all my old notions about what my clients needed and how to help them, and adopted an entirely different viewpoint, and once I stopped dealing with the superficial issues or the ancillary issues, didn't focus primarily on all the behaviors associated with the problem, like the substance abuse, like the abusive relationships, and focused on the character issues themselves, the real meat of the matter. Once I did that, the work got infinitely easier, and guess what? The people I were working with actually started to get better.
Wow, that's wonderful. So there is hope.
There is hope.
What I'd like to do is get more into some of those character disturbances, but I want to remind everybody, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and my special guest today actually is George Simon Jr. He's a doctor. He's a licensed psychologist. His first book, In Sheep's Clothing, was amazing. I read that, by the way, George. It was awesome. And it really focuses on character disturbances and clarifies a lot of, you know, why people have these issues and how we can help them in society. His latest book is called Character Disturbance, The Phenomenon of Our Age. It's a great read, and it'll teach you a lot about what's going on in society with, You know, a lot of the criminals and the people who are coming out with weapons and the people who are so-called going postal, a lot of loose cannons, you know, in our society. So what I like to do is, why is this happening? I mean, what's going on in our society? You talk about, you know, a lot of entitlement and there's a lot of permissiveness going on. And why now? What's happening in our society? Go ahead, Dr. Simon. I'm sorry.
Well, I think one of the things that has happened is that we have become almost numb to this change, this cultural change that has that's come about in the last 30 or 40 years. We've come to accept what has become commonplace. And at first we were outraged, and then, unfortunately, because folks did try to do some things about it and found no help in the traditional ways that they have tried to seek help, I think they kind of threw up their hands and said, well, there's really nothing that can be done. This is just something we have to live with. And in my book, I make the point that this is not true. We just need to adopt a different approach. We as a society need to hold people more accountable. And the same thing is true when we're actually dealing with one of these folks as a professional in therapy. We have to hold folks accountable for their behavior.
I agree. And I think that's really important. So society sort of changed. We become numb. We're just kind of like, how do we deal with this? A lot of people who have these character disturbances, and I want to talk about the different personality disorders that you're really talking about in this book as well. But a lot of people just go away because it's scary. You know, people don't want to deal with them. There's too much drama with the borderline. There's antisocial who are too charming and rip you off and do horrendous crimes. And, you know, there are all those different personality disorders that we'll get into. But, you know, I think this is what's happening now. People are kind of going away and they don't want to deal with it. And it's more fascinating to watch somebody get crazy on Jersey Shores than it is to, you know, try to call a therapist and get help for them. But anyway, so what are some of these character disturbances or personality disorders that you talk about in your book that I think people will go, aha, I know someone who has that?
Well, I talk in my book about the fact that of all the various personality types, this dimension of personality that I talk about, of character disturbance, some personalities fit very nicely on the dimension of more neurotic than character disturbed. In other words, some personalities just by nature tend to be more shaped by their fears and insecurities. Some personalities, however, are more defined by their lack of fear and insecurity and by their excessive capacity and excessive tendency to trample the rights of others or passively disregard the rights of others. And the two personality types that I focus most on in my book with respect to character disturbance are the narcissistic personality and also what I call the various aggressive personalities. That was an interesting kind of discovery that came about in the work that I did for my first book, In Sheep's Clothing. We've always known about the personality type that we call antisocial. But what I discovered is that there were many more what I call aggressive personality types other than the pure criminal, just the person who it wantonly and breaks all the major rules and ends up spending a good deal of their lives incarcerated. There are a lot more aggressive personality types than just that. And in both of my books, I define those individual subtypes of aggressive personalities and look at their characteristics quite in depth.
And just for the listeners as well, antisocial personality disorder, it doesn't mean someone who is, you know, shy or withdrawn from society. A lot of people think that. It is
one
almost,
of those misused terms,
Like borderline. But it's sort of with, you know, someone who is in, I want you, Dr. Simon, to define this personality type for the listeners, if you can. And then we'll go off into some of the other you know, within that spectrum, some of the aggressive personality types that are out there.
Yeah. So. Well, in my books, I talk about the antisocial personality being the what I call the unbridled aggressive.
Right.
Antisocial, that term literally means against society.
Yep.
These are the folks that pit themselves kind of against the established order.
Mm-hmm.
As they see it, it's kind of me against everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is a very similar dynamic to the other aggressive personalities, too.
Yeah.
But these folks are in constant conflict with the major rules and norms that most of us make ourselves abide by.
Right.
And that's where the term originally came from.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other subtypes as well. There are what I call the channeled aggressive personalities. These are folks who are every bit as tough-minded and every bit as determined to win and to get the better of you and to have their way at all cost, you know,
mm-hmm.
the my way or the highway
right.
kind of folks.
Right.
But they don't lead lives of crime and they don't mm-hmm. wantonly break all the major rules. They pretty well keep a lid on that kind of behavior,
okay.
And they channel their aggressive energies into somewhat acceptable social outlets. So
uh-huh.
you know they might, you know they might be your drill sergeant, or
right.
or they might even be your coach. You know,
uh-huh.
And I'm not, you know, I need to make this clear. I'm not
right.
for a minute saying that, you know,
yes,
all drill sergeants and, you know, and all coaches. I'm just saying
yeah.
that these are the kinds of things that they will gravitate toward.
Right, which is a healthy thing.
Which is a healthy thing.
You know, we can sublimate that into a role where they can be aggressive and kind of let off steam and stuff.
But I also make the point that many times the decision to channel these energies into a more socially acceptable outlet
mm-hmm.
is not so much a matter of conscience and not so much a matter of self-discipline.
Right.
It's a practical decision to avoid mm-hmm. negative consequences.
Right. Right.
And so
right.
when some of these channeled aggressive folks think that they're going to get away with it,
mm-hmm.
or think that there's nobody watching,
yeah.
or think that they're just clever enough to evade detection, they will break the rules.
Right, right.
That's why it shouldn't surprise us. You know,
mm-hmm.
these headlines are made quite frequently in the world of professional sports, et cetera,
right.
Where some of these folks gravitate to. It should not surprise us,
right.
Frankly, mm-hmm. when those major rules are transgressed.
Right.
Because these folks have a hard time saying no
yeah.
to themselves.
That's right. That sense of entitlement, I guess, like you mentioned earlier.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. So, let me just interject this. I just, you know, just wanted to put this out there. What would be the difference between a more aggressive personality type, like let's just say the drill sergeant, or the, you know, who's kind of putting their energies out to that, or major players out there on the basketball court, who we won't talk about right now, but and someone who is one of those withdrawn people who we don't really see, who went postal or started firing on a classroom or something like that. Are they pretty much personality? Do they have these characteristics as well? Or what do you think that's
You know,
about?
Sometimes that is true. I wish that there were a general profile for the folks that make these kind of headlines.
Right.
But there really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things that can put an even fairly well put together personality over the edge under severe circumstances. I mean, you read about cases where people have been subjected to, like, incessant bullying
mm-hmm.
or excessive
right.
social ostracization of some
right.
type,
mm-hmm.
or they've had a series of events happen in their life
right.
that
right.
would make almost anyone, you know,
exactly.
kind of crumble.
Major abuse.
So you read about those cases. But
yeah.
then there are also those cases where
mm-hmm.
there was something really character deficient in the
mm-hmm.
individual right yep. from the beginning.
Right, and you can kind of see that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even in those cases, many times people will say after something horrible has happened, well, you know, we thought he was just a pretty regular guy, or she didn't seem out of the ordinary. And it just is a testament to how numb we have become to the seriousness and the extent of this problem.
And you look into some of their histories and you start finding out from relatives and you get information that these people had conduct disorder, you know, when they were younger. They were the kind that were torturing animals or, you know, setting fires or doing destructive things. And this is some of the information we find out. Which leads
the more homework you do and the deeper you look, the different it all looks. The same thing was true in that Scott Peterson case, if you recall, you know, and everybody was sympathetic on the front end, you know. And there's also some really important things to consider here too. You know, one of our old notions was that people are going to be okay character-wise, and they're just going to be good and wholesome folks unless really bad things happen to them when they're growing up. And in fact, what you will find as you look at many of these cases, you will find upbringing that was just great. Environments that were supportive, nurturing. How do you explain that within the traditional theory of people are going to be all right unless something bad happens to them? And in my book's point, I really have to drive it home sometimes that civilization is a process. We are not born that way. We are born animals. We have all these instinctual drives and things that if it were not for a number of shaping influences, we would all be just kind of running amok. So the fact is that we need more than just good, wholesome, supportive environments. We need a supportive social and cultural structure that encourages us to be well-behaved. And that's what is eroded, unfortunately, in our culture today.
It really is. I just flashed on O.J. Simpson. I just wanted to throw this out to you. Is he sort of the typical example of what you're talking, not typical, but you know what I'm saying, the example of what you're talking about? When you're talking about the aggressive personality type.
The channeled aggressive, yes.
So he was capable of committing murder, do you think?
Well, you know,
he was acquitted.
He was found not guilty of that particular crime, but then he was found...
in the other personal...
What's the technical term for it? I'm not sure.
I'm not
a lawyer.
No, I recall that, and I didn't. I just kind of threw this out because I was just, you know, I just remember seeing all those scenes from the television in the in court and him trying on the gloves and, you know, just pleading innocence and all that. And I we were talking about, you know, the aggressive personality and the sports figures and all that. And it's been a long time, but he's still incarcerated now. The private lawsuit he lost. From the family members of his victims.
One of the points I make in the book that's really important for people to understand with respect to all the aggressive personalities. You know, in real estate, there is this slogan that there are three things that count. Location. Location and location. And with respect to the aggressive personalities, there are three things that matter to all of them. Position, position, and position.
In society.
And what I mean by that is that with respect to any relationship, and you brought up the O.J. case, if you look back in the history of that relationship, you'll find this too. With respect to any relationship, when it comes to the aggressive personality, it's all about position. If I'm on top, And you do my bidding, everything is just fine. And so if everything goes my way, if I'm always the winner, if I have my way, there's no problem. But when I'm in that one down position, or I think you're getting the better of me, oh, there's trouble.
And that's pretty blatantly antisocial right there that you're talking about. Now, so we talked about narcissistic and the aggressive personalities and some of the subtypes. What we're, you know, one of the most, I think, talked about disorders in this society, well, I know in Los Angeles, is with a lot of the actors and actresses, a lot of the people who are in the spotlight, they say, oh, they have borderline personality disorder. You know, can you explain for the listeners what that's about? And does that fall within your aggressive personalities?
Well, one of the things that I do in my book is I make the point that this this particular classification has been the subject of some debate for some time, because it's one of the more popular diagnoses these days. You know, we have our diagnoses du jour.
Yes, we do.
In mental health.
Yes.
You know, there was a point, I think, about 15, 20 years ago where everyone had an anxiety disorder.
Yes.
Do you remember those days?
Oh, I do.
Everybody had one.
I think everybody has bipolar.
And then following that, just about everyone was bipolar.
There you go. Catherine Zeta-Jones just came out and said, I have bipolar too, and I had to check, which is, you know, okay. That's cool.
And now that borderline label gets thrown around quite a bit. But I'm going to just boil it down to this two most essential characteristics.
Okay.
One has to do with emotional self-regulation.
Yeah.
For some individuals, in their character development and their personality development, they have not been able to emotionally self-regulate.
Right.
There are a lot of things that can contribute to this. Some biological factors contribute to this.
Mm-hmm.
Some environmental factors can contribute to this.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these folks have histories of quite severe abuse,
right,
neglect in their backgrounds.
Sure.
So that can contribute to it, but that's one big piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that is a problem with identity solidification. In other words, some clinicians have even called this disturbance, borderline personality, a disorder of the self.
Right.
These are the folks that are kind of lost souls who, even in middle age, aren't really sure of who they are and how they want to view the world and operate in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So they have an unstable a sense of themselves, and then on top of that, they have an unstable emotional and a behavioral pattern. So they're behaviorally and emotionally erratic,
right?
And at the same time, unsure of who they are.
Right.
This is a pretty bad combination.
Right. Right.
And so it creates a lot of problems in relationships. But one of the points that I make in the book, character disturbance, is that no two borderlines are alike, because if you accept the notion that one of the hallmark features is that the person's personality didn't come together and solidify in a healthy way, then all the various other personality traits that there are out there, histrionic traits, antisocial traits, narcissistic traits, they can all be to varying degrees present with a borderline personality. And I can tell you that borderline personalities with antisocial features are very, very different from, say, borderline personalities with emotionally dependent features.
Right.
They're two different characters.
They really are. It's true. That's
And
I think a lot of people don't understand that. Yeah, I've had a lot of, you know, people whose families have actually forced them to come into therapy, and they're sitting there, you know, one on the chair, two on the couch, you know, about what can we do about this person? We're not going to give them any more money. We're not going to allow them any more help unless they come and get, you know, get some work. And it's a very frustrating disorder for many families to understand, you know, and I get that. By the way, folks, if you just tuned in, I'm on the phone here with my special guest today, author Dr. George Simon Jr. He is really a fascinating writer. His first book, In Sheep's Clothing, talked a lot about character disturbance, understanding what it was all about. His latest book is called Character Disturbance, The Phenomenon of Our Age. And it's kind of helping us understand and survive in the clinically disturbed folks in our lives and what's going on in society. You know, what is going on with this permissive, and this, you know, aggressive society right now that we're allowing this and just numbing ourselves to what's going on with a lot of things. So, moving on, maybe you can just briefly, we can just kind of note some of the, and we've sort of touched on these, some of the characteristics of the people, you know, who have character disturbance. We've talked about the aggression. Sense of entitlement is a big one, right?
Yes. You know, we have kind of always thought, too, that folks who seem to project an image of excessive self-confidence or seem to have inflated self-esteem, the traditional notions about that was that underneath it all, they were really very insecure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we even thought at one point that bullies were cowards,
right,
underneath.
Right.
And, you know, the research has steadily debunked that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pretty seriously.
Yeah.
The fact is that one of the characteristics that distinguishes the neurotic personality, or excuse me, the character disturbed personality from the neurotic, is that with a character disturbed personality, unlike the neurotic, who may have a false kind of self-presentation, maybe hiding their true self,
right,
with their outward appearances, the disturbed character, it is just exactly how they present themselves. That's who they are.
What you
so
see
when
is
they,
what you get.
When they act like they are all that,
right,
they really do think they're all that.
Right.
It's not a cover for anything.
Right.
They really think so.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And so you can expect them to behave accordingly. You know, when they really think that they've hung the moon,
mm-hmm,
and that they can't do any wrong,
mm-hmm,
and that they're entitled to anything they want,
right,
they're going to act that way.
Right.
And that's the hallmark, actually, of the most appropriate type of treatment that we have these days,
mm-hmm,
we call cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yep.
Its hallmark principle is that the way people think about things,
mm-hmm,
that's the cognitive component,
mm-hmm,
pretty well tells you how they're going to act.
Right.
That's the behavioral part.
They're
linked. So there's no way that there's going to be behavior change,
right,
unless you address very directly the distorted ways that these people tend to view the world.
Right.
And so it's, you know, it's an entirely different kind of approach. You know,
uh-huh,
the approach is, you know, it's not all about you.
Right.
You may feel entitled, but you're not.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And it's an entirely different kind of a more confrontive, and you know, confrontation has a bad rap within therapy circles.
I know.
There's an art to doing that,
yeah,
without any kind of maliciousness or
That's
ill
true.
Will.
That's true.
You know, I've never had any kind of ill will toward folks.
Sure.
My job is to assist people,
right,
in growth and development.
Right, right. We encourage,
but that doesn't
you, yeah,
mean that I can't confront,
right,
some really screwy thinking that's going to get somebody into trouble.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I feel it my duty, especially if I'm intervening with somebody who has this,
yeah,
pathological sense of entitlement.
Yeah, yes.
You have to address that directly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And hopefully with family members, they're talking about how it's affected them, or friends who very few they usually have, but, you know, the people in,
yeah,
their lives and how they've impacted and how it's, you know, and hopefully that will sometimes get through. And then you start working on how they think to change,
yeah,
their actions towards others.
Yes.
You know, in your book, The Character Disturbance, Dr. Simon, you talk about the 10 commandments to form good characters.
Yes.
Can you just mention some of the probably more important ones? And can people who have these character disturbances learn to live by these commandments? And can they change at all?
Yes. And let me speak to that second issue first, and
yeah,
then I'll come back to some of the more important, what I call the commandments of character development.
Okay.
You know, the change is hard,
mm-hmm,
especially later in life. Change is always hard.
Yeah.
And when a dysfunctional character is already quite comfortable with their personality style, even if it's a problem for everybody else, change is even more difficult. But that doesn't mean that it can't take place.
Right.
One of the reasons it typically doesn't take place, there are two reasons it typically doesn't take place. One is that it typically doesn't take place within the confines of therapy, because traditionally minded therapists want to use tools that they were trained to deal with neurotics on disturbed characters, and those tools don't work.
Nope.
I make an analogy in my book that it's kind of like trying to do brain surgery with a dentist's appliances.
Right. Good one.
You know, that's a good one. There are certain tools that are meant for certain kind of work.
Yeah.
You know, if you take some of those other dental tools into the OR and do brain surgery, you're going to do some major damage. The work is entirely different. So that's one of the reasons why I think folks have thrown up their hands and said there's no hope or there's no help available.
Yeah.
The other reason why it's difficult to affect change is that folks are steeped in traditional notions about what makes people do the things that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So they misinterpret not the behavior of others that is many times abusive and exploitive, and they don't know how to respond to it.
Yeah.
They don't know how to empower themselves at the moment in their interactions with disturbed characters so that they can set those limits firmly, stick by them, enforce the boundaries, and basically set the rule. I call this in both my books, setting the rules and the terms of engagement. So that they can not only protect themselves, but actually provide an environment in which the behavior of the other person can be shaped to some degree. And so that's why in the past it's been almost impossible to get change with these folks. It's because our therapeutic approach hasn't been right.
Right.
And also the average person doesn't know how to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And in my book, I try to do both. I give examples basically of how a therapy session goes very, very differently with someone like this.
Right.
And I also give practical, what I call the tools of empowerment for anybody that's in any kind of relationship, what they must do in order to set all the terms for engaging with these folks.
And this is why I really enjoyed reading your book, because it does help. I mean, a lot of people are reading your book because they don't know how to deal with their relatives or friends, or, you know, how to deal as they may have been victims or had family who were victims of these people with character disturbance. And they're, my gosh, how can I deal with this? And it's really, listeners, there's wonderful explanations on how to deal with this. And you know,
over the years, Dr. Michelle, I have gotten literally thousands of emails and letters.
Yes.
The very nicest one I got just yesterday, because it didn't speak to anything in particular. It was just thank you.
Oh, that's lovely.
And it was signed by the person. But why I mention this is, of all the thousands of emails and letters that I've gotten, I'd say about 90% of the time, folks tell me the exact same thing.
Yep.
They say that the most important thing for them was adopting a different framework for understanding what's going on.
Right.
It wasn't that they locked into any particular piece of advice that I gave in the book about how to deal with these folks. It's that as soon as they cast off their traditional assumptions about why people act the way they do and adopted an entirely different approach to understanding disturbed characters, whatever kind of disturbed character they were dealing with in their life, as soon as they got that different approach, everything got better. It all became clear. They had that aha moment.
Great.
And for the first time in their lives, they thought, It's not me.
That's right.
It's them.
This is the problem with a lot of families and friends and situations. They say, what am I doing wrong? What's wrong with me? And
then exactly.
This is why we call them crazy makers sometimes, because they make us feel like we're crazy. Listen, I do have a hard break coming up for CBS News, Dr. Simon, but I want to encourage everybody out there, if you are interested in, and I think most people are in our society, helping you understand and survive the clinically disturbed people in our lives and why there's so much chaos in our society going on, and the, you know, Charlie Sheen's out there, and not that he's got some disturbances going on, a lot of sense of entitlement. The book is called Character Disturbance, The Phenomenon of Our Age, and my guest on the phone, and this has been a great informative interview, Dr. Simon, is George Simon. He's a licensed clinical psychologist. He's been studying this for years. He's been working many workshops for several years, and of course on the topic of working with disturbed individuals. Now, how can people get in touch with you and read your great blogs, Dr. Simon?
Well, my own personal blog is at www.manipulative-people.com. Mm-hmm. And I have hundreds of articles posted there with a lot of comments from the blog readers about how they not only learned some things about the nature of the folks that they were dealing with, but mm-hmm. how they applied some of the principles that I advocate to making their situations better.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really good resource.
Great.
And I also am on the faculty of a very well-read international blog that's based in the United Kingdom, and it is called Psychology, Philosophy, and Real Life. And its URL is www.counseling2Ls, because mm-hmm. they're Brits, you know.
Yes, they are.
CounselingResource.com.
Great.
www.counselingresource.com.
People can find your book anywhere. They can go
Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
You
your local bookstore can order it if they don't have it on the shelf.
There you go.
And the same is true with for In Sheep's Clothing, my first book on dealing with manipulative people. That book was basically a word-of-mouth bestseller. I published it independently at first because the folks in New York didn't want to touch it. And just through reviews on Amazon and word-of-mouth, it ended up selling over 250,000 copies.
Wow. It's a classic.
And so it's now published by Parkhurst Brothers, and it's still out there. 16 years later, we're still going.
It's a classic book, and it's true. It's wonderful, valuable information. And, of course, Character Disturbance by Dr. George Simon is also published by Parkhurst Brothers as well. So, Dr. Simon, thank you so much for being such a wonderful guest on my show. Fascinating. I could talk to you about this for hours.
But, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And take good care, and I look forward to your next book.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye now. All right. That was, you know, again, Dr. George Simon, author of Character Disturbance. Pick it up. Check it out. Learn a lot about what's going on in our society. And maybe if you have family or friends that are suffering with some of this stuff, you'll learn a little bit more how to deal with them. Empower yourself. All right. This is Dr. Michelle, and you've been on the couch with me. Got to get going here. CBS News coming up next. Do contact me at docmichelle@aol.com if you have any questions or comments. Would like to get some help. Any referrals you need, that's great too. All right, and as I always do say, take care of yourself first. Then you'll be great for others. Have a good one. Bye-bye.